Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Conversation that I had in Pennsylvania that I think you'll really enjoy. You can email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, or subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast by taking out your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Hit the plus sign and subscribe and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. We have an action-packed week as we're going to be in Dallas for our Young Women's Leadership Summit. So keep your eyes on the episodes. They keep on popping up. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Look, over the years, you've probably tried difficult investments in stocks and mutual funds, so you know they can be volatile and unpredictable. But with inflation running at the highest rate of 40 years, do you want volatility and uncertainty? Being able to sleep at night, knowing where your money actually is, it's worth its weight in gold. And speaking of gold, if you've been jumping from one investment to the other, a gold IRA from Noble Gold might be perfect for you. A reliable hedge against inflation just fell into our laps. With gold, you shield yourself from gains and taxes. You keep the real value of your wealth. You'll own a global asset. It's something tangible and protect your wealth against an economic crash. I own gold and you should as well. So what's not to like? And this month, for every gold IRA above $20,000, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 now to find out more at noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, noblegoldinvestments.com. Thank you, everybody. Wow, what a program. So impressive. I speak at a lot of different places. This is very different than what I experienced last week. So for those of you that don't know, I visit college campuses, so you don't have to. And last week I was in Boulder, Berkeley, and Cal State Fullerton. So it's a lot different of a reaction. I know some of you are booing. Totally understandable, right? You should boo Berkeley. It's a very dark place. To give you an idea how dark Berkeley is, I had to bring a deliverance guy with me, right? Just in case. Victor Marx, if you know who I'm talking about. But here's the amazing thing, and there's something so special happening in our country. When I visited Berkeley and Boulder last week, we had a major problem. And it wasn't Antifa. It wasn't all that nonsense. We couldn't find rooms big enough to fit all the students that wanted to come to our events on campus. Very special. So I traveled 330 days last year all across the country, doing 3 podcasts a day, a couple hours of radio. And I'm in the education space, but a little different than Day Spring. I go to hostile territory and try to spread truth where there is none. And tonight, we get to celebrate and support a place that is full of truth and full of light for liberty. It's a little different, but the same thing, really, because we're trying to raise up a generation to understand what they've been given. You know, we as human beings all have a lot in common. One of the things we all have in common is that we've all been born into a world we did not create. So we're born into a set of circumstances that are not our own. And boy, are we blessed to be born in the set of circumstances in the United States of America. And that statement alone is agreed upon by basically all of you, but it's now wildly controversial to say that in most schools today. In fact, it's foreign. It's a concept that most young people, when I come and I talk about how America is the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world, how the Constitution is the greatest political document ever written, They want to believe it, because in the soul of a person is a yearning to want to actually love the place that you're from. But there's this disconnect between all the propaganda that they've been, you know, led to believe and versus what they are all of a sudden hearing, what they know to be true. And I think one of the reasons for that is actually something that is playing out right here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania right now, which is that, you know, Lancaster Online, I think that's a newspaper around here, very dishonest publication, but yeah, thank you. So I don't know. Maybe I'm insulting somebody. I don't care. But whatever. They came out with a story about my trip here And the title was totally right. The rest you could just skip. It's a bunch of garbage. But it says this because, I don't know if you know this or not, but Nicole Hannah-Jones from the 1619 Project is also here in Lancaster. We'll see if she was able to get as big of a crowd as this. I don't know. But it says in Lancaster Online, and they were right about one thing. They said, Charlie Kirk and Nicole Hannah-Jones both visit Lancaster, and they present differing visions for America. And I said, that is absolutely true. I do not share the same vision of the critical race theory, woke ideology, 1619 Project people. I do not share the same worldview. In fact, they're polar opposites. Nicole Hannah-Jones believes America was founded on racism from its core. Nicole Hannah-Jones believes we are built on white supremacy. Now, you might say, who is this person? She's teaching many of your children right now indirectly in public schools. She writes the textbooks that many of your children either in college or in high school are consumed. She's like the archbishop of nonsensical historical teaching in American secular leftist ideology. And Nicole Hannah-Jones wrote the 1619 Project, won a Pulitzer Prize for it. She doesn't really say much, but whatever. The New York Times publishes it, even though she doesn't use original source documents, use quotes out of context. She has an ideological agenda that she tries to fit into kind of the cherry picking of historical events. And her big argument, of course, is, well, look, the founders had slaves, or some of them did, therefore bad people. Okay, an unbelievably sloppy, lazy, and incoherent argument, obviously, because since when do we judge the fruits of a person based on the mistakes they made in their life? In fact, the Bible tells us not to do this. The Bible tells us to do the opposite. In fact, we are supposed to measure a man between the people that he or she was in the generation. And I'll prove it to you. Genesis 6 says that Noah was a righteous man amongst those in his generation. Now, mind you, they didn't just say Noah was a righteous man, because maybe Noah was not so righteous of a man if we compared him to Elijah or Joseph. But no, Noah was a righteous man amongst those in his generation, because Noah was the best we had to offer at that period of time. It's like looking around like, well, we got Noah. That's about it. Who are we to go and say all of a sudden, you know, that Thomas Jefferson guy, yeah, all right, whatever, architect, governor, statesman, secretary of state, president, author of the Declaration, but we don't like him because he owned slaves. But Thomas Jefferson on his deathbed, which of course Nicole Hannah-Jones would never tell you, he was one of the principal reasons why slavery as we know it in the West was on its way out, not on its way in. You see, Nicole Hannah-Jones, being the charlatan that she is who teaches your children, she would never tell you that in the United States of America in 1775, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the first ever anti-slavery convention was held and chaired by Benjamin Franklin. She would never tell you that the first state ever to abolish slavery did so, inspired by the Declaration of Independence in 1777, Vermont. She would never tell you that Thomas Jefferson, in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, blamed King George for bringing the sin of slavery to America. She would never tell you that Thomas Jefferson fought tooth and nail to try to abolish slavery in the 1790s as governor of Virginia. She would never tell you that Thomas Jefferson in 1807 in March signed a moratorium of new slaves coming into the United States. She would never tell you that 9 out of 13 of the original founding colonies or states had already abolished slavery by the time the Constitution was ratified in 1787. She would never tell you that in the Northwest Ordinance, which was a reflection of American founding values, had a unanimous agreement to say new territories, no slaves. She would never tell you any of that. Now, why? It's because those little pesky things called facts make you thankful to be an American, and she does not want you to be thankful to be an American. Instead, she wants to train your children to be ungrateful. And that is the divide in America, isn't it? When you have a citizenry that is thankful, that is anchored to the land, the story, the history, the culture, all of a sudden, they're a lot less likely to go burn down a Wendy's. They're less likely to go march in some silly parade around systemic racism, whatever that is, doesn't exist. When people are thankful citizens, they slow down and they want to conserve what they've been given. You see, this all starts in whether or not we teach history correctly. If we teach history correctly and we are able to engender a sense of informed patriotism, if we're able to get young people to be thankful for the land of which they are in, not only will they be less likely to go to these radical movements, they'll be inspired to do the opposite. They'll be inspired to all of a sudden want to go to great lengths to try to preserve the good, the true, and the beautiful. We as Americans are stewards of this inexplicable project in self-government, a constitutional republic that was summoned into existence. And so the question that I'm asked often on college campuses, they say, and again, only someone who hasn't traveled could ask something so stupid as this, right? They say, what makes America different? And I would love to go send them, I don't know, Bangalore, India for a week, where they have 100 million people that don't have running water and without a toilet. But anyway, what makes America different? How about this? We have a birthday. Most nations don't. Now think about the significance of the fact that we have a date, a time, and a location when we started. America did not stumble into existence. We were summoned into existence. We believed something, our founders did, and they acted on it. Go show me the founding birthday of Great Britain. You could have an approximation of a couple hundred years. How about China? A couple thousand years? The idea that America started at a specific time, that we were declared as a country, showed that we believed something so firmly that we were willing to act on it. Now, when you read the Declaration of Independence, which, by the way, fits beautifully into the U.S. Constitution, there's this modern liberal project that tries to make it seem as if the Constitution remedied the problem of the Declaration. It's not true. They're beautiful documents that fit one and the other. As you understand very quickly, the Founding Fathers, being the students of human nature and history, they were making universal declarations. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands that ties them to the other, deriving from the separate but equal station of the powers, and it goes on to say the laws of nature and nature's God, that they are making an argument that what we're doing right here is right no matter when it happens. The Founding Fathers were making an argument that even though technology might progress, even though, quote-unquote, times change, human beings do not. And then they put that into the law itself, the United States Constitution, the greatest political document ever written, which, by the way, is even more applicable today than it was in 1787. You might say, Charlie, how dare you say something like that? Let me prove it to you. The Constitution, every single day, protects us against a tyrant, a health director, a ridiculous mask mandate, or something that tries to prey on our liberty. Thank the Lord we have the Constitution still right now to say, actually, you have to live by this. Actually, you have to live by this. Now, mind you, because of bureaucratic despotism and fourth branch of government shenanigans, far too often the Constitution isn't obeyed. But the Constitution was not written for the times. It was written to stand the test of time. And this is where we as Christians can find great comfort in what the Founding Fathers gave us. It's because we think that, no, we believe that even though we have airplanes and Twitter and all this nonsense, that human beings remain exactly the same. Human beings are equally as broken and sinful in the 1780s as they are in the 2020s. You needed Jesus Christ then, and you need Jesus Christ now. That does not change. We're broken by original sin, that we are likely to abuse power. So the Founding Fathers did the opposite of what most governmental projects have attempted to do in the last couple hundred years. They tried not to mess it up. I want you to think about that. They made no qualms that they were not trying to create utopia. Federalist 51, James Madison said, if all men were angels, government would not be necessary. He's basically saying, we're dealing with a rather tampered raw product here called human beings. How else could you explain separating power amongst so many different places? How else could you explain a structure where it's so hard to get something done? The Founding Fathers knew that if you're able to centralize power, that you are trying to touch something that only one being should be able to do, and that is God. The Founding Fathers made no mistake that only God should be able to have the executive, legislative, and judicial power all combined in one. That we as human beings must always separate those powers into different buckets, that if you try to get them all in agreement, it better be a very, very good idea at the right time. In fact, the tension, the structure between the branches is important. Now, I ask college kids all the time, I say, what makes America freer than other countries? And if they even believe that, which is nice, they'll say it's our Bill of Rights. I'll say every banana republic has a Bill of Rights. I say, what makes it different? You mean you could go down to any African country. Yeah, they'll have a Bill of Rights and, you know, half of them unfortunately don't obey it. What's the structure of the United States Constitution? Because the structure by definition is rooted in biblical humility. That we are not God and we will not pretend that we are. The Founding Fathers believed that there is a God and they were not them. They were not him. It's a very important point. Imagine winning a war against the world's greatest power and voluntarily giving up that power. That's the Founding Fathers. Every other despot, dictator, civilization, country that came prior, with very few exceptions, when you win wars, you keep the spoils. They could have created the Hamiltonian, Jeffersonian, Madisonian dynasty. They could have split every state to go be kind of their own kind of king and their and make everybody pseudo-serfs, and no one would have questioned it. Who wins a war and makes yourself less powerful? Christians. That's who. People that understand the Bible and knew that they were fighting not just for land and for treasure, but for something that's God's idea, not man's idea, liberty. That's who. They were trying to bring forward something that was biblical, that was abstract, and they wanted to make it concrete. Self-government. The ability to chart your own destiny. They said, what if we could all of a sudden create a civilization, create a society that people can be free in the pursuit of virtue and pursuit of morality? This was an unthinkable proposition. So the American Constitution and our government has always had a couple promises. There's two ways to govern people. You can govern people through speech, or you can govern people through force. Vladimir Putin governs through force. He doesn't try to persuade people when he does something. We, at our best, govern through speech. You have to make a good argument to get power. Vote for me because I'm going to do this, 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 and this. The founding fathers knew that the fundamental part of being a human being is that you must speak to exist. Because we're made in the image of God. In the beginning, God spoke it into existence. He spoke it into existence. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. That word is logos, rational speech, the ability to reason. The founding fathers believed that they said, listen, the only way that could properly give up power for a civilization was you got to make a really good argument to be able to get power. You got to convince people over a long period of time. The Constitution was so distrustful of human nature, it spread power over time and space. So it takes a long period of time to do something, and a lot of different people from a lot of different corners have to agree to it. Said differently, the states created the federal government, and the federal government did not create the states. That it was a bottom-up people movement, not a top-down despotic dictator movement, which is another promise of the United States Constitution. I'm afraid we're losing this right now, and we need a revival to reclaim it. For most of America, the many ruled the few. I'm afraid we're getting closer and closer to where the few rule the many. Now, this gets wrongly labeled as a democracy. Let me be very clear. We are not a democracy. We've never been a democracy, and I pray that we'll never be a democracy. Now, that is a thought crime because people don't know anything about democracies. We're a constitutional republic with certain democratic systems to be able to elect leaders. What's the difference? Why does that matter? It's semantics, Charlie. Or Nicole Hannah-Jones would say, no, we are a democracy. Let me tell you what a democracy is. It means if 51% of the room wanted to all of a sudden take the rights in the 49% of the room, they could do it. A democracy is an up or down vote of what is good, true, and beautiful. A constitutional republic makes truth claims and you must live to them. And if you want to change them, you're going to need more than a 51% vote. You're going to need a long, drawn out process to change that. A constitutional republic makes it intentionally difficult to be able to take your God-granted liberty away. A democracy, you could do it in one session of a legislature. It's one of the reasons why Europe just continually votes themselves into further oblivion. The structure of what we've been given by the founding fathers is exceptional and unique. Now look, there's a lot of different directions I could continue to go with this. And what I just articulated, unfortunately, is not being taught very well in our schools. In fact, we are now seeing civilizational turning chaos happening, not because we don't just teach the Declaration, the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and the Founding, but instead the deconstructionist ideology has seeped into every major institution, where now we have someone that is now a Supreme Court justice who cannot answer the question, what is a woman? Ketanji Brown Jackson was asked the question, what is a woman? And she said, well, I don't know. I'm not a biologist. Now, I'm not a veterinarian. I know a dog when I see one. I'm not a meteorologist, and I know when it's raining. And I'm not a biologist, and I can tell the difference between a man and a woman. And we as Christians, and those of us that live, and those of us that live on Team Reality, must understand the broader game that's at play here. And this is where Dayspring comes in so beautifully. If you do not teach children that certain things are true, then where does it stop? You have a Supreme Court justice that cannot give you a definitive answer of what is a man and a woman. And guess what? That is the furthest right now, and it will go even crazier, extrapolation of deconstructionist ideology. It, at every turn, tries to make you doubt, question, and tear apart things that we know are fundamental to existence, that we know are essential to our survival. You see that in the whole transgender movement. You see that where all of a sudden we have the blurring of lines where, you know, Pennsylvania's own at University of Pennsylvania, the death of women's sports, where you had the man who thinks he's a woman all of a sudden be the 462nd best swimmer overnight, transition to be a woman and win the NCAA championship. Why would that not be wrong? See, we as Christians have an answer. We have two answers. Number one, I want compassion for the person who thinks they're in the wrong body. I want treatment for that person. And most importantly, I want their soul to be won for Christ. But secondly, that doesn't mean we have to all of a sudden rearrange the rules of the game to allow cheating. We as Christians believe cheating is wrong. Both things can be simultaneously true, because we as Christians and most societies are not able to articulate this. But the Bible tells us when you have strength, you are morally called. In fact, you are required to protect the not as strong. That's what we as Christians are called to do. You see, in a pure Darwinistic secular view, why wouldn't it be wrong to terminate the child in the womb? It isn't. You're older, bigger, stronger. Why wouldn't you allow the bigger, stronger man who thinks he's a woman win the NCAA championship? You see, absent a biblical worldview, things that are taken for granted, things that we say, that's not right, chaos. And that's exactly what we're living through. Why is there no wisdom in our society? Well, it says very, because there's no God in our society anymore. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's why. You want to know why we can't answer basic questions? Absent a transcendent morality, who's going to tell you what to believe? The person on MSNBC, Rachel Maddow? Who's going to be the arbiter of moral truth? Thankfully, for us Christians, we have the truth, and we know the truth will set people free. But here it segues to now the final part of what I want to talk about here, which is, why isn't it happening? Well, it ties beautifully into the whole theme of tonight, which is courage. George S. Patton, of whom I'm a big fan, famously said that moral courage is the most necessary yet absent characteristic in men. Aristotle said that courage is the first virtue. Without courage, there are no other virtues. Now, courage is a very interesting thing. I talk about it a lot. We love supporting courage. We love seeing courage. When we witness courage, it's a beautiful sight. So let's define it. I'll give you a couple definitions of courage, technical definitions. Courage is doing the right thing when you don't know how it's going to end up. I want to say that again. Courage is doing what is right when there is risk. You cannot be courageous if there is no risk. Just getting up and having a cup of coffee is not courageous, regardless of what your silly self-help Eastern meditation book tells you, okay? It's an act of courage. Actually, it's not. It's an act of courage to do whatever. No, courage is when a mom shows up at a school board meeting trembling in fear, knowing that she might be called every single name in the book to go say, you're not going to teach my kid who's 7 years old that he can transition to be a woman and give him puberty blockers. That's courage. Courage is the pastor who decides to speak up for the unborn, even when he gets emails saying that I'm going to leave this church if you speak about this. And he says, I'm going to do it anyway. That's courage. Courage is a very interesting thing, because it requires no skill. It's one of the only things in the world that anyone can do. I want you to think about that. You don't have to be strong, tall, fast, rich. Anyone can do it. This is why battlefield literature is so interesting to us, isn't it? Because in the war literature, it's sometimes the least expected person that ends up being the most courageous. The person you never would have expected that storms the beach and sacrifices his or her own life for something that is above themselves. And that's the other part of courage, is that courage requires the proper alignment to what is good. The most courageous acts are for things that are above yourself. And so people ask me all the time, Charlie, what does it take to be courageous? Well, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but instead of one of courage and a sound mind. But it requires a choice. Here's the cool thing. Every single one of us today could decide to be courageous right now. It doesn't take a class. It doesn't take a training. It doesn't take me to go through some sort of long type of thing, say, well, do this and do this. You all know what you have to do. And here's how. Whatever you know you want to do, that you've been trying not to think about, that makes you nervous, that's the thing you have to do. It's that simple. And it's different for everybody. The courageous act requires risk. It could be admitting to a friend that you've been talking bad to them about their back. That is courageous because you don't know how it's going to work out. It could be running for office. It could be homeschooling your child. But generally, the type of courage that is most missing in our country is standing up to the bully. That's what's been missing. Is that for the last 2 years, we've seen the not-so-gradual erosion of our God-granted freedoms and liberties in a way that I never would have imagined. So how do you stop it? Well, courage begets courage. Courage is contagious, which was said previously. But it requires someone with the risk to go up against someone that currently has power over them. It could be a county supervisor, could be a school board member, it could be a boss. And mind you, it might not go out the way you want it to. But it was beautifully said previously, and I totally agree. Liberty is only protected by the courageous. You cannot have liberty if you do not have courage. And courage is very difficult to have without faith, but it requires that in action. So we look around right now at our country. We have a courage crisis, don't we? My goodness, it's so hard to find the courageous. But they're starting to bubble up. I'm starting to see more parents say, I've had enough. I'm starting to see more pastors say, I've had enough. I'm starting all of a sudden to see people realize that they are in a bitter fight up against those that wish to destroy the republic, destroy their family, and destroy the way of life as they've known it. And courage also requires a dedication and an understanding that you'll do what you could do and you'll leave the rest up to God. It requires a humility. It's rooted in the action of courage. Look, everybody, I know you love freedom and you want to defend it. And I know you love the Constitution. It's a beautiful document, and so do I. And it's the same with Hillsdale College, the best liberal arts college in America. Hillsdale's mission is pursuing truth and defending liberty. It gives its undergraduate and graduate students the best education and is working to make this education available to all, from offering free online courses to helping support K-12 schools. But today I want to tell you about Hillsdale's amazing free monthly digest of liberty. It's called Imprimis. Over 6 million households and businesses receive Imprimis for free each month. And you can join them by subscribing right now at charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. There's no strings attached while you're there. Take an online course. Take their Aristotle course. Take their Winston Churchill course. Take their Western theology course. Generous donors who love freedom make it possible for Hillsdale to send you Imprimis for free. Imprimis is one of my favorite publications, and Imprimis means in the first place. It's short, smart, useful, and fun. Start receiving your own free copy of this great digest of liberty and take an online course while you're at it. Enroll. Their Great American Story course is incredible. Visit charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. Check it out right now, charlieforhillsdale.com. And so people all the time ask me, Charlie, what do I do? Things are falling apart in our country. Things are not going well. I get this question all the time. I know a lot of you have done everything that has been asked of you. You've watched Tucker Carlson. You've bought the pillow. You've done everything that has been asked of you. You bought that weird chair that goes up the stairs. You've reverse mortgaged your home. You got more silver than you know what to do with. You've done everything that's been asked of you. Those aren't courageous acts. Outside of the reverse mortgage actually being a scam, there's not a lot of risk in that. Now, what does one do when you feel helpless? Well, that's what Dayspring is already doing. They're looking intergenerationally. We got to start watering the tree from the bottom up. We got to start looking at our great hope will be this next generation that will have lived through this attempt to terrorize and implement tyranny at a high level, and they're not going to let it happen. a proper alignment and understanding. An unintended consequence, what man will use for evil, the enemy will use for evil, God will use for good, of this awful chapter that we've lived through. Is all of a sudden we've seen homeschooling quadruple in the last couple years. We're seeing dinners like this get at full capacity because you know there's something not right and you want to do something about it. And you're rather disgusted, impatient with people that don't know any better telling you that you live in a racist country, or the least racist country ever to exist in the history of the world. More people of more countries of backgrounds have come to this country and flourished than any other place on the planet, most racist country in the world. Show me another multiracial country that's able to flourish and have peace, relative peace, like we do. It's an exceptional nation. Instead, all of you feel that there's a stirring happening in America, and you're wondering, what can I do? Well, learning is helpful, learning where you come from, but also teaching. I believe that there will be, starting in this period of time, a revival from the bottom up, an awakening, an enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, where all of a sudden there will be a reference point of a generation that will be so committed to these ideas that the opposition will not understand where it's coming from, where they'll be blown away by the passion, the precision, the understanding, and the wisdom of a generation that very well had every reason to give up and be cynical. And that's where Dayspring comes in, and that's where the work we at Turning Point USA do every single day comes in. And so I'll close with this, because I'm very precise with time, as I promised I would be. The country's in trouble, all right. However, I believe that there is momentum. I'm starting to see the rise of the citizen against the regime. I'm starting to see people that have never been engaged and involved at every corner start to take back what is theirs because the founding fathers gave you ownership of the country. They work for us. We do not work for them. I'm starting to see a revival of self-government. I'm starting to see people ask questions of the tyrants and say, I'm going to remove you. I'm starting to see all of a sudden people in leadership challenge the unchallengeable, defunding Disney's special tax privileges in Florida being one of them. But it all comes down to this. The greatest man to live in the 20th century was a man by the name of Winston Churchill. The West would not exist in its current form without Churchill. I firmly believe that. Churchill was the only man that was smiling the morning after Pearl Harbor. He walked into his war cabinet meeting with a cigar and a cup of whiskey. It was in the morning, remember. And everyone was very sullen and sad and downtrodden. Churchill was extra chipper that morning, and he goes into the war cabinet meeting and proclaims, "We have won the war." And they look at him and they say, "What?" He says, "We've won the war, gents." And some brave soul decides to question the prime minister and stands up and says, "What do you mean, we've won the war? The Nazis are bombing London every night. We can't keep the Royal Air Force going. We barely got our troops out of Dunkirk. We have no plan to get near Europe, let alone protect the homeland. And national morale is breaking, and there's calls for your resignation. What do you mean we've won the war?" Silence filled the room. And Churchill took a puff of his cigar and a sip of whiskey, and he looked at his war cabinet and said, "Ah, over the last couple of decades, I've got to know the Americans. And let me tell you, that beast has been awakened, and the war is over. And let me tell you this, everybody, when we awaken as Americans, nothing can stop us with faith, courage, and the fight for liberty." God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.